What's up, y'all? It's Ejo Sai Kenty here, man, with Flip the Culture, where the culture won't change until we do. I have a very special guest with me today, Miss Lisa Craig Taylor, man. I'm so excited to have her here because we met through just my journey with becoming a TEDx Alabaster speaker. One thing that really got me is I was thinking about how much she pushes the speaker's brands out. Like, she's like, hey, I want you guys to, this is about you guys. This is not about me. I want you guys to get on podcasts and talk about your speeches. And I want you all's quality of life to benefit from serving the TEDx Alabaster stage. And I was just thinking, like, who's highlighting her story? Because I think I was reading an article one day about just her heart towards pursuing the TEDx stage. And instead of her pursuing the stage herself, she created opportunities for other speakers around the city of Birmingham and beyond. So Lisa Craig Taylor, thank you so much for being here today. I'm super excited to have you.
Thank you. I am excited to be here. Thank you for considering me.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for considering me. Yeah, you and your team. You've created such a strong team around you because at first, you know, when you're going through the process, you mm-hmm. know, I just saw you. Mm-hmm. I interacted with you. Mm-hmm. And when we had our meet and greet, I saw how dynamic your team is around mm-hmm. you. And that speaks volume of you. So, like, how did you get into just having an eye for the TEDx brand?
I was going through a dark season in my life. Mm-hmm. And I used to stay up late nights, laying in the bed on my device. And I would watch TED Talks.
Yeah.
And those TED Talks were very inspiring for me. Hearing different content and messages and those stories, I used to always say, I want to be on that stage one day.
Yeah.
That was my vision, my heart's desire. I wanted to be on the stage. Mm-hmm. And then one late night.
Again, it always come at night, man.
Late in the midnight hour.
Yeah.
I submitted an application. Mm. And I was like, you know what? Why not? Anytime I do something, I want to do it 100%.
Yeah.
So what better way to learn about this organization without hosting it?
That's different. Like, that's a different mindset. And I know I heard from an article, not heard it, but I read it,
okay.
Right? Because I was like, man, I need a way to get, like, your story out. Like, because one night, mm-hmm. I was just thinking, I'm like, dang, man, how? And I just did some research, and that's like when I called you.
I called you.
I'm like, hey, don't make this, I don't want to make this sound weird, but, like, I'm actually looking at you online right now. Like, mm-hmm. I'm trying to see, okay, if this is, Flip the Culture is a brand that's for athletes, mm-hmm. you got to be an athlete, because your go-getter mindset, I'm like, you had to go through something from a physical standpoint mm-hmm. to, like, push past just, mm-hmm. you know, fatigue. So, Lisa, you shared how outward success you battled depression, mm-hmm. right? So what was the first sign that your pain might lead to actual purpose?
Well, if you Google define purpose,
mm-hmm.
the verb says one's intention. And the sentence that they provide is, God allowed that pain for a purpose.
Okay. So hold on. Let's do some wordplay.
Okay.
Because you said God allowed. So he didn't invoke that pain on you? Or did he just allow it?
He allows it.
Mm. Can you go a little bit deeper?
He doesn't want God, everything that happens to us, he allows it. That means that he knows that you're capable to sustain it. Mm. But he gives us the free will and the free choice to determine the path that we're going to go from there.
Wow. Wow.
So when you're going through something painful, I used to sit up and I'd be like, God, why? Why me? What is in everything that I've endured or gone through in my life, God has connected me with people to encourage them, to inspire them, mm-hmm. to provoke them to go from one point to another.
Mm. Wow. So after receiving, like, your multiple scholarship offers, right, like, mm-hmm. going through high school, I want you to think about that time, like, going through all that. and you decide to play basketball for Lawson State Community College. I think it's like neighboring next to Winona High School in Birmingham, Alabama.
Correct.
Experiencing athlete identity firsthand, why did you decide to go JUCO, and how did the game shape your resilience later?
I was a teenage mother. I had a son.
Wow.
And, you know, my story, my birth parents abandoned me. At 10 years old, I was an orphan. So I went through a lot of things in life that I had to learn from mistakes. And I met coaches. I went to Arrington Middle School. I met a coach, and he said, I'm going to get you in basketball.
Wow.
Then when I got to West End High School, shout out to Coach McGarry. He helped develop me because I was the tallest one in the room. You know, I played volleyball. I played basketball. I was aggressive because I had a lot of anger in me.
Yeah.
So they taught me how to use that anger defensively. And I'm competitive.
Wow.
I wanted, when I'm playing, my goal, I'm trying to be MVP. One year he tried to give two players MVP. Nah, coach, it's only one MVP. We got to pick. You know. So when it came time for scholar MVP, made it to state playoffs, statewide recognition, scholarship offers coming in from everywhere. But it requires you to stay in a dorm. You can't live in a dorm with a child. I never wanted my children to go through what I went through. So I chose my child. I wanted to be with my son, and Lawson afforded me that opportunity.
Wow. That's amazing. And you said something profound just then, that your pain was the fuel to how you were very competitive. It fuels your competitive nature to make you a major force on the defensive side, right? So just giving you a glimpse of just my mindset too. Like, I played the defensive side of the ball because I could just invoke pain on somebody. Like, I can just hit somebody and not go to jail for it.
Yeah, you can take it all out. And defense needs the offense.
Right. Because I can intercept the ball and I'm good.
Yeah, you good. You
know, like, you good, right? So,
gone.
So, you know, that's a beautiful thing while you're in it.
Correct.
But that transition after, where it's like, okay, I still have this pain, but where does this outlet go? So with that transition, what did that look like for you?
Pain becomes permission to advance.
Say that one more time, please.
Pain becomes permission to advance. So what that means is pain is a starting point, but you have permission to move forward if you choose.
Wow.
Mentally, you have to choose. Because, honestly, there's a lot of people out here that are functioning in pain. There's a lot of people, hurt people.
Yeah.
If you never address the source of that pain, you're going to be stuck, and you're stuck in a cycle. But if you pause, like you just did, I noticed you close your eyes because you're focusing. You have to pause. You have to breathe. You have to embrace the stillness so that you can move forward.
Wow.
Or you'll become stagnant. You can be 30 years old still dealing with 10-year-old pain.
Wow. So you can really be 30-some years old, 40-some years old, and you're reacting as if you were a 10-year-old.
One thing can happen, and you'll revert back to that 10-year-old trauma.
Wow.
And dealing with pain can look like writing in a journal. It could look like deep breaths. It could look like using your voice to share your story.
How does one get to that point to be like, okay, you know what? My story, other people need to hear this.
It's going to be on different platforms. Some years ago, like I said, God has always put me in position to share my story. I was calling Alabama Power to set up a payment arrangement.
Wow.
Young lady on the phone, and she just starts telling me all her personal business. And instantly when I heard her share, I could relate, and I was able to help her to navigate from this point to this point. In the midst of a phone call with the power company.
Wow. So, and I'm even thinking about your publishing of the My Voice is Dope, mm-hmm. right? You allowed yourself to reclaim the narrative through that, mm-hmm. right? So when we're going to like storytelling and what that looks like, how did that shift your perspective and inspire others?
It gave me permission to pivot because I decided that I no longer wanted to hide in my pain. I knew that there was more, and I kept hearing God say purpose. Purpose. That's why I Googled it. When God speaks to me sometimes, I'm like, what does that mean? But when I saw that definition, it blew my mind. And I knew that God was going to put me in positions and place me in rooms and on platforms to share that your voice is dope. You deserve to tell your story. And telling your story does not mean that you're trying to hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. It does not mean that you have malicious intent. Your story deserves to be heard because there's someone else out there right now that needs to hear that somebody else made it to encourage them to make it, mm-hmm. to encourage them to move, to encourage them to have the, you know, you look at, oh my God, I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. But if I tell you, well, you know, when I went through something similar and this is what I did, that gives you the courage to say, I can do this too. There's power in your voice. Yeah. That's your superpower.
Mm-hmm. So with you said that God speaks to you. I'm not going to ask you the question that everybody has, right? They be like, okay, how do you know what God's speaking to you? I feel like people can Google that and then hear everybody's voices, right? Mm-hmm. But my question to a person that is in that depressive state, that they're in that transition, right, and people are saying, why me, right? Why do you think God speaks to you?
To encourage you, to let you know he'll never leave or forsake you, to remind you that he is real. There'll be, when you hear people say God speaks to me, it's not always a voice. It could be an action. It could be a word. Years ago, my first husband was killed. He was a victim of a homicide at a local grocery store. As I was grieving, I mean, in the trenches of grieving, that's why I battled with depression so long. And I was driving down the street, and I looked up in the sky, and I saw the number 8. Biblically, the number 8 means new beginnings.
Wow.
This is how it looked. Yeah. I've had this on my phone for years. He was killed in 2013.
That's the photo you took?
No, I had this made.
Wow.
But biblically, the number 8 means new beginnings. I called my spiritual father. I said, Daddy, I'm riding down the street and the number 8 is, he began to rejoice. He began to praise God. He said, daughter, I've been praying for you. And I ask God to send you a sign to let you know that he's with you, he loves you, and that's your new beginnings.
You know what's something that's so crazy to me? Because I have this saying where, like, the power of perspective, right? You can see the same event at the same time and have different perspectives from everybody in there. Like, for example, if you see a car swerving on the road, and you're in the, let's say we're in the car together, and I say, hey, man, they must be drunk. Then you say, no, I think they're texting and driving. We see the same event, but we have different ways in how we interpret based upon our past experiences, because I may have somebody that I know that got behind the wheel and was drinking, or you might know somebody, or you might even text and drive sometime, right? So I know I was texting you. Never mind. But so I'm looking at this by, and the reason why I go into that is because you're not the only person to have looked up in the sky that day. And saw that same cloud structure, right? Somebody might have looked at it and was like, okay, man, you know, that's not nothing, right? But God has a unique way of making things cater towards you.
A very unique
way.
And with that number 8, TEDx Alabaster is in the 8th month. I've been on my job on a contract for 8 years.
Wow.
It is ending in the 8th month.
Mm.
God is speaking to me new beginnings. Over the years, it's always something that's referenced. Every so often, he'll bring it back to me to let me know, number 8.
I'm about to close my laptop. I've only asked you 3 questions. We about 20 minutes in. But and the reason why I say I'm about to close my laptop, because when you said that, new beginnings, right, there has to be a transition that happens in the midst of the new beginning being present for you, right? Okay. So within a transition, what does that typically look like for you? What does the word transition mean to you?
Something in, so something new can start. Mm. And sometimes that ending is painful. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that ending is devastating. Like, when I say painful, I mean,
yeah.
This week, my laptop crashed.
Yeah.
And you know, everything that's going on, I've been taking it like a soldier. Mm-hmm. I crumbled. I said, God, now, you say you won't put more in me than I can bear. This right here is feeling kind of unbearable.
Yeah.
You know, so you still feel. You still feel things. But then I got a phone call and I got a new laptop yesterday.
Stop playing, man.
From Best Buy. It'll be delivered Sunday.
Wow.
And I said, okay, God.
Yeah.
Because I was honest with them. Mm-hmm. Hey, now all this has been going on. I've been taking it.
Yeah.
Hit after hit. This one right here is not working for me.
Yeah.
So you're correct. Those transitions and those moments go from level to level.
I have a problem with mainstream.
Okay.
Like society, for example, with the entertainment industry, right? We've become desensitized from a generation of transitions. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is you play sports. Mm-hmm. For the mindset of an athlete, let's say for a basketball transition, right? Mm-hmm. Transitions aren't beautiful.
Okay.
For example, if a coach calls a timeout, depending on what side of the playing field your team is on at the moment, you can get your tail cursed out.
Yes.
Right? The coach can get inside. Like, so it's like in that moment, what does the crowd do? Probably get up, go to the concession stand, right? Mm-hmm. They have something to distract them from embracing what a transition actually means.
Okay.
For example, the momentum might be getting away from you, right? So it's like, okay, you know what? Let's take a time out right quick, because now we're looking to game plan and prepare to make sure we transition correctly out of this timeout.
Correct.
Same thing. That's why games have time. Halftime, right? That's why they have quarters. That's why they have all these different things. But I think from a societal standpoint, we've dressed up transitions to look like things that are beautiful, things to take your attention off of things, just like driving a car.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You got these automatic cars now. Rarely do you think of somebody that knows how to drive a manual car because it takes your attention. It takes you being able to feel like what's going on in this car right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you... Ooh, boy. Next question. Your role now as a TEDx Alabaster organizer positions you as a curator of revelation.
Okay.
And that's like, you know, ripples of revelation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see the platform activating healing and agency in others?
We've launched a community. Mm. So in this community, each component builds off each other.
Wow.
That's the ripple effect. Everybody already had, all of you already had existing platforms. But when we come together, like at that meet and greet, what was felt in that room was everything I envisioned.
Yeah.
You know, nobody was better than the other person. Strangers. Yeah. Some of y'all never met each other, never heard of each other, but you connected.
Yeah.
And that's the ripple effect that's taking us to other levels.
Mm-hmm. That, and I love the meet and greet because it allowed us to connect organically.
Correct.
You created the space, but you didn't say like, hey, at this time, you know what? We're going to break off into groups. And I'm like, man, bro, no, please. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would have been fine with that. Mm-hmm. But the conversations wouldn't have been as authentic as... Just, hey, like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, like, what's your story on getting inside TED Talk? Have you ever thought about this? Because we had, you know, calls and stuff like that.
Correct.
But to actually see a person's name with their face, seeing their platform, because I think after that day, that's when I followed everybody.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay, now I put the name with the face. It's like, man, I now have a connection with you now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm concerned with, you know, what they have going on leading up mm-hmm. to it, right? So thank you so much for, like, creating spaces for people around the city of Birmingham and Alabaster and beyond to mm-hmm. come together on a shared stage, but with different walks of life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most beautiful thing that I'm appreciative of.
And that's what you said, something powerful. My vision was not to just curate talks. Mm. I wanted to create community.
Yeah.
So with the community, like you said, now you're connected. Mm-hmm. You may have something where you say, hey, do y'all want to do this? They may have something to say, hey, do you want to do this? We're now a community.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I feel like is lacking inside of our environment mm-hmm. Right now, because everybody operates in silos.
Correct.
Now, we're great. We're fine. Mm-hmm. Right. But this is a team game.
Correct. It's so much. And that's that's even the power in being an athlete. Mm. When I first showed up at Lawson, it was the best of the best of the city.
Wow.
So all of us showed up mm-hmm. on that MVP level.
Yeah.
And we had to learn really quick. If we wanted to win, we had to connect. Mm. We had to be a part of a team. Everybody can't show up and you the MVP. Mm. So it was humbling. It was eye-opening, and it was rewarding.
And you said that, like, showing up as a team. And I feel like when athletes separate from the game and mm-hmm. they're no longer able to come inside the environment that's literally welcoming them mm-hmm. into a program.
Correct.
Right? They have a set schedule for you. They have a playbook. They have mm-hmm. just all these meal plans depending on where you go. I don't know if mm-hmm. Lawson State had a meal
we
plan.
Did.
Y'all
we
did. Man, look at that.
We did. I mean, don't do us like that. We just found out, we said, shoot, as far as we're concerned, we don't do us like that. We had a meal plan.
Yeah. So I have a random question. Mm-hmm. So after you got done playing, right, because, you know, you got training, you have all these different things. I don't know if they – did they provide, you know, insurance for you guys? Like,
yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I was at Murray State, I never went to the doctor. Unless I was sick and I needed mm-hmm. like medicine, right? Mm-hmm. I went to the trainer for everything. Mm-hmm. They made sure I had 20/20 vision on the field, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I had pain, the trainer provided the medicine,
same
right?
Mm-hmm.
So dental, like, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like, it's okay. They have everything laid out.
Okay.
When was the next time that you like went to the doctor apart from you playing the sport? Like, was it years? Was it?
I was an adult. Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that? Like, why do athletes struggle to maintain themselves?
But I think it's
the
mindset of we're in the best shape of our life. Mm. You know, we don't need a doctor.
Yeah.
We were invincible. I mean, it wasn't nothing we could do.
Wow.
So it's a mindset. Mm. It's definitely a mindset.
Yeah, man. I gotta go back and get my eyes checked. I haven't worn glasses or contacts since I stopped playing ball, and that was 7 years ago. You kind of like, bro, I don't need to see a ball no more. As long as I see objects and I can see the road and I can drive them good. And I have a strong astigmatism in my left eye. Fun fact. Yeah. My mom and dad are going to get me on that. But so balancing your professional life with personal mission, what daily structures have you maintained emotional wellness and clarity regardless of serving in multiple roles?
Mindless moments. Mm. Mindless moments are priceless. So in my professional career, I'm a technology supervisor. I have a team of about 18 people. They're constantly pulling on me. With TEDx Alabaster Life, you know, I'm working with 14 speakers, the team, the vendors, the sponsors, they're constantly pulling on me. I have to create, embrace, and provoke mindless moments. That will include my writing.
Okay.
That will include my breathing, mm-hmm. my exhaling, and just being still to just enjoy the silence.
Yeah.
You come to a point in your life where you have to enjoy the silence. Mm. Drown out the noise.
I was listening to a pastor one time, and he said that a lot of people don't enjoy silence because that's when you hear your thoughts.
That's true. But once you get to a place in your life where you're willing to hear your thoughts, it no longer bothers you.
Wow.
That's when you know you're ready to face whatever. Because sometimes those thoughts can be real.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They'd be like, Oh, mm-hmm. Like, okay, all right.
Yeah, it forced you to deal with yourself.
Correct.
Like, being still, I used to be scared to deal with myself. Like, after ball, I was like, man, I don't want to figure out who I am. Mm-hmm. I want to hang on to this ball as long as possible, man.
But if you think about it, when we were athletes, our coaches told us who we were. Mm. They guided us.
Yeah.
My coach, one time, he called a timeout. We was at Parker High School. And he said that girl was pushing me around too much. He said, I need you to get her.
Yeah.
Like you said, he called that timeout. Mm-hmm. That was his, he got on me. That was my reset. When I went back out there, I got him.
Wow.
So we didn't really think for ourselves much.
Mm. So thinking for yourself, mm-hmm. okay? Like let's go into the mind a little bit because you read my outline. And mm-hmm. I've been practicing. I sent it to mm-hmm. my homeboys and stuff, man. Man, like one of them was like, bro, why you sound like that? I'm like, because I read it, bro. Anyway, so in my TEDx Alabaster talk, I emphasize new arenas on athletic psychologies. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you see your message transcending personal healing to shift how just people around you see resilience?
You cannot look at resilience as weakness. Resilience is overcoming. Resilience is where you own. So you can own your story, but you're sharing what you went through mm-hmm. to show how strong you are.
Yeah.
To let others know why you're doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Some people of you sharing this, why is she telling all her business? That's the wrong mindset.
Yeah.
Because if I'm sharing something that I personally went through, it's to help somebody. That just mm-hmm. tells me you're not my audience.
Yeah.
Somebody else is going to be like, man, mm-hmm. she talking to me.
Yeah.
That's why I had you guys do that Dear You letter.
Yeah. That was powerful. I'm not going to lie. That was powerful. Yeah. I might write
it. And if it's time I wrote one, I can share. Okay. My Dear You.
Yeah, right now?
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Yeah.
This is my Dear You as the TEDx organizer.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to clip this and send it inside the group chat.
Dear You, I would tell you this. Your pain is real, but it's not the whole story. Finding your voice doesn't mean forgetting what hurt you. It means refusing to let that be the only part you carry forward. Start by giving yourself permission to name what happened without apology. Then speak from that scar, not the wound. That shift is where power begins. And sometimes the first voice isn't spoken out loud. It's through a journal entry, a prayer, and a deep breath. You don't have to roar to reclaim your truth. You just have to be willing to speak little by little until your healing catches up with your courage.
No, man, sometimes you just got to sit in it, man, because that was... Did you think of a particular, like, person when you wrote that? Mm-hmm. You don't got to say it, like, the name.
That would be, as an organizer... If there's one person in the audience, that's what I would want to say to them. Mm. That, you know, that pain, it does provoke purpose. Mm. And whatever you're currently facing, you won't understand it now, but it will help you one day help somebody else.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, I'm going to get Daniel on that. I'm going to create like a video. Daniel, I got to get you. I got to get you on that. I'm going to send it over to you because I think that's a beautiful, that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I see like just visuals. Mm-hmm. Partner. Okay. Lock in, bro. All right. So what would you say to someone whose pain is still their defining narrative, and how can they find their voice? I think we hit on the finding the voice, but mm-hmm. somebody that's dealing with the narrative of like, man, you know what? This pain is just my identity. I'm like, it is what it is. I'm just complacent.
You have to be willing to look past what you're going through. Because looking at the pain is staying in that pain, in that season. Mm-hmm. If you can try to, because it all starts with your mindset. And if you can try to push past that obstacle, think about it when we were athletes, when we were out there on that field and coach would put something in front of us and he'd say, go through it.
Yeah.
You know, go through it. Go through it. Think about how hard you pounding that thing and you telling what you telling yourself, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this. And then when it happened, you'd be like, yes, I did it. Mm-hmm. Remember that feeling when you did something that challenged you? Yeah. Like you were in the trenches, like, man, God, am I gonna be able to do this? Mm-hmm. But once you did it, how did you feel?
I feel great.
Invincible. Mm-hmm. That's what we have to do when we're facing trouble, pain, trauma. You got to mentally tell yourself, I will not be here forever. Yeah. This is not my final destination. Mm-hmm. And once, the more you speak that to yourself, one day, one moment, in that moment, it's going to click and something's going to change. Think about the last time you really went through something that was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Like just, oh my God. You know, we tend to feel like the world has ended. Mm-hmm. But look at you right now.
Yeah.
You made it through.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't even realize like, dang, when was that? How did that happen? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the transition.
Yeah.
You know, think about transitions in videos and you know, it's quick.
Yeah.
Those transitions go quick. Mm. But in that moment, it feels like forever, but that transition can be quick.
And man, when you said that, I literally saw the car switching transitions. You got to go.
Go.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not quick. You never seen a car transition by turning. Or making a U-turn. Like, no, you got to get up out of there.
And here's another analogy. I just came to me.
Yeah, talk to me.
We're sharing stories mm-hmm. where a lot of people see the highlight reels.
Yeah.
So this platform affords us an opportunity to share a story that goes beyond that highlight reel, which is a transition. Somebody may see you. I've did my research on you too, and I'm looking at your social media and I'm seeing you on all these stages and how you, when you talk, you're so passionate and you're moving around, you're moving your hands and stuff. Somebody may see that and they want to be, man, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. But they don't know what it took to get you there.
Yeah.
They don't know about your injuries. They may not know about when you was hurt, how you did not think you were going to make it. I heard you when you were on Joe's show and you talked about your daddy had to tell you, hey, we don't give up. Mm-hmm. We finish what we start.
Yeah.
So that was your transition. Mm-hmm. That was your push. You had a mother who was praying for you.
Yeah.
A mother who was nurturing you, who was giving you what you couldn't give yourself in those moments. But look at you now. That's the purpose in your pain. If you never would have went through those injuries, if you never would have went through that self-doubt, you would not have this platform.
Yeah.
That's
yep.
the purpose in your pain.
Mm. That was you good.
that's it.
Yeah, man. that's beautiful to hear you say that, because that, like, when you were talking about that, I'm like, dang, yeah, I did say that. Yeah, I did go through that. Because a lot of times you can get so caught up in what's in front of you mm-hmm. that's your propeller. Like, that's literally the propeller
that's
for your
the history
boat.
Of every athlete. Yeah. Every movie, because I love movies. I love my movies. But when I look at these movies with athletes, when they hurt, man, you bet everybody better run.
Yeah, get out the way.
They angry.
Mm-hmm.
La, 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 you know, they angry. But when they heal,
yeah.
When they heal, they're remorseful. And if you ever notice the history of every athlete that's been hurt who recovered, they were 10 times better than they were before the injury.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The human body is amazing. The mind is amazing. The resilience is amazing. But it all plays a part in the purpose of your pain.
Yeah. And I think somebody asked me this earlier. Of like, hey, did you always know you were going to make it through your injury?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you know. First they said it was a sprained ACL. I went and got a second opinion. They told me, I told my ACL, LCL, MCL, and partial meniscus. I'm like, hold on, that ain't sprained, bro. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, okay. No, I didn't think I was going to make it through that.
Absolutely not.
My heart was like, man, okay. But I think it started out of fear.
Correct.
Right? And mm-hmm. I was always told to give my fear to God.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, God, I don't want to come back to Birmingham because all I knew was football at the moment, and I feel like this is a premature way to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, so I was like, okay, if I haven't taken care of my business of capitalizing on this opportunity,
mm-hmm.
like, God, if I give you this fear, I want you to dictate what the outcome is.
Okay.
I'm going to handle my stuff on the field, right? So when I got out of surgery, the doctor said, hey, well, I asked him, I said, hey, can I play again? He said, well, that's up to you. I did my part. It's time for you to do yours. And I was like, oh, this is better than telling me
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it gave me an extra, and it's Dr. Dugas that mm-hmm. Worked up under the Dr. Andrews. Like, shout out to you, bro. I got to get you one of my books. But, but, like, him saying that, I was like, bro, like, you just told me that you basically, you the best out here.
Mm-hmm. He gave you hope.
He gave me hope.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what he knew he did on his part.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dang, like, I got to show up now.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I left the game, it's like, man, I didn't have to play another down. I don't regret how I left.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I processed it, leaving in that transition, it was
mm-hmm.
tough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter how you separate from the game, whether you got injured, whether you won a state championship, whether you won a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
We get players all the time on ESPN saying they went back out of retirement. I'm like, bro, you just won the Super Bowl. Bro. Why you leaving, right?
Because it's that passion. It's
passion.
The passion.
They don't know where to put it.
Mm-mm. They don't know what to do with it. It's the passion.
Oh, what? Man, I had a beautiful time with you. Like, do you have anything else that you would like to share with the audience? Especially, like, with TEDx?
So, TEDx right? Alabaster, mm-hmm. August 15th. Shelby County Arts Council, you want to be in the room. This is an experience.
Mm.
So here's the thing. We're making history.
Yeah.
This is a series of firsts. I'm a first-time organizer.
Mm.
Every speaker is a first-time TEDx speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be in the room so you don't hear about it secondhand.
Yeah.
You want to experience like what we experienced mm-hmm. at that meet and greet. Imagine that same energy the day of this event.
Gotcha. I love that. So what can the TEDx Alabaster community and also the Flip the Culture community do to aid, like, My Voice is Dope? Like, how
okay.
can we help?
So My Voice is Dope is a story that was featured by Hallmark Mahogany. They just picked up another one of my stories. You
okay.
are capable of extraordinary triumphs.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So do what you're doing. I appreciate this opportunity to come on the platform. Follow me on social media,
mm-hmm.
Instagram, Facebook. Go to Hallmark Mahogany website. Leave a comment on my story and invite me out. I love speaking. I love sharing.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get out here. This is a movement. And I want everybody to understand your voice is dope.
Yeah.
I want everybody to understand you are capable of extraordinary triumphs.
Mm-hmm.
I want everybody to understand that your voice is your superpower. I want everybody to understand you don't have to be silent. Don't suffer in silence.
Mm-hmm.
Use your voice and share your story.
So what's a way that somebody can get in contact with you?
you can reach out to me on social media.
So what,
Instagram,
what is social media?
Lisa Craig Taylor.
Okay.
Both on Facebook and Instagram. Follow me, send me a message, and I'll respond.
All right. Cool, cool, cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I usually dap people up, you know.
Hey, let's dap it up. Yeah, let's dap it up.
Thank you
so
much.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I have a question for you.
All right.
So what is one thing that you would share with an athlete who is struggling with this transition? Mm-hmm. What is one thing you would like them to know?
Yeah. The first thing I'll ask them is, what did they most miss about the game? Because a lot of people, especially when they're helping or seemingly try to help an athlete transition, they always think forward, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's deal with the past. Like, what makes you excited? What are you passionate about? What frustrated you about the game? Because a lot of your purpose is going to be found out of frustration anyway. Like, the thing that you can't go to sleep without doing, like you said, it came to you at night, and you're like, man, you know what? I need to do this, right? That gives you the firepower to be able to pull the trigger on what you want to do.
Okay.
So that's the first thing I would do is ask the athlete what they most missed about the game and what frustrated you most about the game as well.
Okay.
Then we can just start talking about, like, hey, what do you like to do? Like, what brings you peace, right? What brings you joy?
Okay.
What are these type of things that are irreplaceable, something that's going to be with you for the rest of your life? These are intangibles, right? These are things that is not just a thing where it's like, oh yeah, you know what, I like videography, and you know, that's what, no, let's get away from that, because then we're gonna find ourselves in the same cycle as to, if you don't have the means of doing videography again, you just found another identity that could be taken away from you in any type of fashion.
Okay.
Right? So it's getting into the depths of what the game provided for that person, dealing with that, and then seeing, like, okay, apart from this, how do I supplement and pull from the things around me that gives me joy, that gives me peace? And then we can start to look at how we can add value outwardly. But we have to pull things in inwardly first to be able to express it outwardly. That's that's how I'd start.
All right. Good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was crazy because I've never been asked that question before.
I mean, hey.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. Because because one of the biggest things for me with coach, you know, like I said, we can win a game.
Yeah.
We feeling good, and after the game, you still fussing.
Yeah.
Coach, can we celebrate? Nah, we still got it. We got to think about the next
game. Next game,
Hey, what?
Man, my coach used to tell us, hey, on the bus ride back to the school, celebrate. But once we hit that school again, the coach is already upstairs watching film. This back in high school, I'm like, dang, coach,
like, can we have our moment? So, you know, that's because a lot of people, it's the transition mentally. That's the struggle.
Yeah.
We're our biggest enemy a lot of times. If we can change our mindset on a lot of things, so many things will get easier.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just wanted to ask.
Man, thank you. I feel like I should have answered that in your seat, and you should have. But it's okay. I can probably edit it and then flip it.
Maybe. And then maybe one time invite me back. I'll interview you.
Oh, stop. Okay. All right. I'm kind of scared. But,
I'll do it. I got you.
Okay. All right, man.
All right.
We'll do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Flip the culture. Well, the culture won't change until we do. Thank you so much. Stay tapped in. Like, comment, and subscribe. Share it with a friend. Love y'all. See y'all next time.